Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth.
Hello!
And special guest, Vigard.
Oh my gosh!
This week, we're talking about a fear of friends and shunning social situations. But first, we have a little Spotify update.
Oh, a Spotify update.
We are sitting at 41,469 listeners.
We did it.
Good job, everyone. So I want to ask a question to everyone that is listening and watching. If you're on Spotify or if you're on Apple, head over to YouTube, get down to the comments and answer this question. The question is, do you have social anxiety? I don't know. Do you?
No, I do not really. No. I just don't really care to see people that much, but not because I'm anxious.
Just an asshole. Just introvert. Fantastic. Well, why don't we get into it? It's quite obvious what we're talking about this week. It is social anxiety. And it was because of our patrons that we're doing this. Our patrons voted this topic in.
Thanks,
and we're
guys.
Doing it. So thank you to all of you for doing that. If you want to vote on topics every single month, you can go ahead and join our Patreon. You can also submit topics and get bonus episodes and a whole other show or whatever. Check it out. Link down in the description. So why don't we get into it? What do you think social anxiety is?
Anxiety related to social things.
Yeah. Yeah, more or less. Yeah. I mean, you don't have social anxiety, Luke. Have you ever had social anxiety?
I think I have a lot of it, but I think because I think I've thought of a lot of my anxiety as not that, but when I feel like it. A lot of my anxiety might be social anxiety. Like, I don't know. But I also don't know what specifically goes into the difference, right? So, like, a lot of my anxiety I was thinking about, and I was like, does that count as social anxiety? I don't know.
Well, lucky for you, you might find out today.
Yeah, I'm taking this as a therapy session. This is not, I'm not here to be a guest. I'm here to learn if my anxiety is social.
Hey, look, we get a guest, you get some therapy. Yeah. It's give and take on this podcast. Speak to a doctor, we're not licensed medical professionals. So, what is social anxiety? So social anxiety is a disorder, obviously. It's also called social phobia. Now, you might hear us talking about phobias again sometime soon. Who knows? Oh,
is this next week?
Maybe it's next week. Maybe it's later. Who knows? But social anxiety or social phobia is a long-term and overwhelming fear of social situations. Now, that is from the NHS. Now, it usually starts when you're a teenager. I am pretty sure I had social anxiety as a teenager. Mm. And then I don't know what happened. I think I just kind of grew out of it. I don't know. Like, I used to not be able to order at Subway. Used to get very anxious. Never used to like talking on the phone. Nothing like that. And now, I don't care. I don't care about anything. I don't know what's happened.
You don't care about anything.
No, it's all gone, Luke. I don't care about anything.
Your anxiety was not cured. You just ceased caring about anything.
You lost emotions in it.
You win some, you lose some, you know?
I think that might be a bit of a sort of blanket solution to everything.
Like, if you have social anxiety, stop feeling.
Yeah, how do we cure social anxiety? Well, we could start by killing everyone. That would fix it.
Would fix it.
It would, yes.
I mean,
unless animals. Do animals have social anxiety?
Some animals, I think, do have social anxiety.
But only when they've been around people.
When I say some animals, I mean like dogs and like, you know, like things like that. I think, dogs can have anxiety. I'm not sure if they can have social anxiety, but I know that dogs can get anxious around other dogs. So I don't know if that's classified as dog social anxiety or
cats
not.
Cats also are usually prone to having anxiety, I think.
What
are? Like cats.
Oh.
I know like a lot of people with cats with anxiety.
Oh, one of my friend's cats actually just, yeah, so a friend of mine from back home, they had a cat. And then they got a new cat, a kitten, and the new cat was just like peeing everywhere. And they did everything possible to stop it. They were, you know, anything you could. And then they took them to the vet again and they were like, nothing is working. We're going to have to get rid of this cat. And it turned out that the cat just had anxiety.
Oh my God.
They just gave it anxiety medication. The cat's okay now.
I mean, that being said, I did also see a recent headline. This is more to do with what Vegard said about cats having anxiety. I saw a headline, which admittedly I did not read the body of the article, so take this with a large pinch of salt. But I saw an article that was like, cats get the same mental health conditions as their owners.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I also haven't read it. In
Look at us. Kari frantically Googling now to check we're not spreading misinformation.
I've not found an article. I found a research paper on it. But
that's better than an article.
I'm just shocked that both of you are the kind of people that will read a headline and be like, oh, that's interesting, and then not want to read more.
I think I did like watch it, but it was probably like a TikTok or something, though, and that doesn't that's really do
nice. Even worse.
That's worse. Yeah, I think that's worse than reading a headline and moving on.
But also, I like watch every TikTok that's like, these facts with a high level of doubt, because all of them seem so wild.
I watch them and get really irritated and then come to this podcast and talk about them.
I find them on TikTok sometimes, and that causes me to just leave the app, because it reminds me what a load of crap I'm consuming.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, the only time I tend to actually use TikTok, like scroll through, is when I'm incapable of stopping myself from doing it.
Yeah. Like, as soon as you wake up from that, you're like, oh God, and you close it as quickly as humanly possible.
Yeah, like, if I didn't need TikTok for my job, I wouldn't use it. Like, I don't even scroll on Instagram. The people were talking about how bad Instagram had gotten, and I had not realized, because I just don't use the app that way.
That's in part because it's got really bad, probably.
I didn't really use it much that way before. Like, I mean, I stopped scrolling a lot. I didn't scroll that much, but I reduced my scrolling massively when I started getting an ad every sort of third post.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, there's not much point in this. But I wasn't even doing that much anyway before. This is unrelated. Why don't we get back to social anxiety, okay? As I said, it can usually show up around sort of your teenage years. That's what usually when it sort of starts. And it can massively impact your life, as does any psychiatric condition. That's very much the reason that they are psychiatric conditions. It's because they're messing with your life in some way. And it can get better as you get older, like for me. But it can also not do that.
like for me.
Well, don't worry, you'll grow up one day, baby. Sorry, that sounds really rude. I don't mean that to be rude. Specifically targeted at Picard, nobody else with social anxiety.
We just brought you here to roast you. How is this going to help your social anxiety? Hey, come to this safe space. We're going to do a fun podcast.
I leave here like, huh?
Just made it worse.
I knew I shouldn't have gone and socialized.
That'll learn you to socialize with people, will it? why don't we go through some of the symptoms of social anxiety? Off the top of your head, any idea of any of the symptoms? Just one each if you want.
Anxiety at the prospect of having to be around people.
Vigard, can you say a symptom?
Excuse me, am I wrong?
Can you say a symptom and not just describe the thing?
Like the things that happen when you get social anxiety, like once you're socially... Yeah, I guess like sweaty palms you get, mm-hmm. worrying, I tend to feel like I'm going to be sick.
Oh, so like nausea?
Nausea, yeah.
Is running quickly away from people on the list.
You were spot on, Vigard, by the way.
Hey, again,
I'm looking at my...
That might happen.
I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you, sir. You were spot on. I'm looking at my list here, and you were using even like the same words that is used in this NHS list, almost as though someone's read through that many times. And Luke?
Yes?
Disappointed in you. But no, you're spot on. Both of you are pretty spot on. So let's just run through these. So you can worry. They use the word worry a lot. So, you know, worrying about everyday activities like meeting new people or talking to people or, you know, going to work or shopping or going to school. Any of these. Look, worrying about going into a situation with other people, right? Yeah. Like social anxiety, pretty obvious. And then also avoiding or worrying a lot about different social activities. And Luke, that's where your running away from people comes in. Avoiding those situations, that's sort of a symptom of social
anxiety.
The
reason I say that is because I definitely have had like episodic anxiety mm-hmm. around a specific social situation in which I've just decided, it's not worth it. I'll just go elsewhere. That's why I mean it's not a social anxiety. It's episodic. Mm-hmm. It's like just a bit, maybe contextual as well. Maybe I don't want to see a specific person or whatever. So I've had, it's not across time, mm-hmm. but I have had the experience of not wanting to be amongst specific people or even just any people for a little bit. I often used to like take myself off. I had like a limit, and that's, I suppose, introvertism. Mm-hmm. Like I had a limit and I had to just like, it was a funny joke amongst my wife's family was like, they'd have a party whilst we were there and I'd just have to just go to the bedroom and just sit on my own for a bit. I kind of recharge and I come back down and everything's fine.
Yeah.
I used to live with Luke. Whenever there was a party, nowhere to be found. It just was
disappeared.
Not. Yeah, was not there. You go to his room and he's sitting there with maybe like one other person.
Yeah, I take people off, have a one on ones.
Yeah. He does. He just grabs you.
Yeah.
Just steals
come
you away.
On, you. Come on. Just goes in and points at one person like, you're coming with me.
You did it to me at my party as well, on my birthday.
Did I?
Yeah. You pulled me away into my bedroom.
That sounds like me.
Oh, wait, no. No. No, back to social anxiety symptoms. Always worrying about, you know, being embarrassed or doing something embarrassing, like blushing or sweating or appearing incompetent. Is this you're looking like you're going
very targeted.
It.
I have sweaty palms right now.
Oh no. Your hands are shaking.
Yeah,
I actually can confirm sweaty palms.
Sweaty palms and I'm shaking.
How embarrassing for you.
I know.
Are you feeling embarrassed? Oh my god, really? No, that's really me. I can't do that.
This is the bullying banker podcast.
This is exposure therapy.
Yes.
And it worked. No,
I'm just
No, okay. People are going to be listening to this thinking, what a silly, silly podcast. So let's get back to being very serious about this very serious condition. So back to it. Always worrying about doing something embarrassing, like I've mentioned, but also finding it difficult to do things when you're being watched. And again, I'm taking all of this from the NHS. So if you feel like you're being watched or if someone is looking at you, you can find it very difficult to do something.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
Like talking on a podcast, for example, it could be very difficult.
No,
when you're
actually,
being watched.
I don't have problems with like eye contact and like stuff like that. But one of the big ones for me was like for a while eating with people, and I thought that was linked to I thought it was linked to like having problems with eating in the past. And I brought that up with my therapist, and she was just like, "Oh, that's probably linked to your social anxiety, not that." And I was like, that's I'd never even thought about it. And that's what kind of like started making me think about, oh, I think most of my anxiety is social anxiety, and I just didn't realize.
It's really hard to tell sometimes though, isn't it? You know, I was talking to someone that diagnosed me with ADHD, and they were saying all of these problems in your life could be linked back to ADHD. So ADHD can cause low self-esteem, and so it could look like you've got anxiety and depression, and you will have those things, but they'll all stem from a different root. And similarly, you could look at something and be like, oh, I have all of these problems. Where are they coming from?
Yeah.
And not realize, oh, it's all linked back to this social anxiety.
Did you have any specific thoughts, like when you thought about eating with other people, was there a specific like, oh, they're going to think I'm eating weird, like I'm eating loudly or anything like that?
I think when I was in those situations, it was less obvious. It was just that I would like literally struggle to like get food down, and I would be like tense and just like overly tense, and I would just hate it. I would just be like dreading going sitting down for a meal, because a lot of it's also like I don't like, I guess, feeling trapped, or like the biggest one is just like if I feel like I'm like in an enclosed space, it doesn't matter how big, but if it would be weird for me to leave, then it's like
I get you. So hold on, this sort of eating thing, the difficulty eating around other people, is that stemming more from being so uncomfortable in that situation that you can't eat, rather than being uncomfortable about eating around other people? Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Yeah, because it would be like, I guess the like following things would be like, oh, what if I feel sick, or what if I like, there would be a lot of what ifs that follow with it, but the first thought is just like I would like be tense and just like not want to be around people.
That's
it would be weird for me to just get up and leave the table.
Yeah.
So like,
well, no, it wouldn't though.
It wouldn't, but it would feel.
It would feel. No, yeah, I know it would feel. Weird. I'm just saying this for you and for anyone listening. You can just say, "Hey guys, I'm gonna step away from it for a second."
Yeah. Literally, any situation, it's like most. It's fine to do that.
And if your friends find that weird, yeah, bad friends.
Get new friends.
Yeah.
Easier said than done. But
it's interesting because it's like that thing that you sometimes hear about, like, when the body's fight or flight response is activated, and the example that's given is like if you were being chased by a lion, then the body's going to redirect resources away from... This is why like anxiety and PTSD and things like that can have long-term health effects, because your body redirects like healing processes, because you don't need to heal your tissue if you're being chased by a lion.
Yeah.
So like long-term anxiety can have detrimental effects on your health. And so in the same way, if your fight or flight response is activated by anxiety, which is activated by a social situation, mm-hmm. your stomach's going to be like, what are you trying to do eating? You'll be chased by a lion.
Yeah, I think one thing you need to remember, especially if you've got social anxiety, but just for everyone to remember, is that honestly, no one really cares that much. Like I'll talk loudly in public or do something stupid in public and I live in London. People will just walk by unfazed.
In a big city, it's like everyone is so worried also about themselves that no one is noticing you.
Yeah.
Like everyone's, I know that's like commonly said, but like it's so true. Like I can't think of a situation right now to be like, oh, remember that weird thing that person did in public? Like you can't think of that.
If you ever need evidence of this, go watch my video called The 12 Days of Snapemas. In which I walked down Oxford Circus in central London, dressed as Snape with a pink guitar. Pretty much everybody just walked past and did not care.
I mean, you've done a lot of embarrassing things in public, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like this podcast.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I think it's something important to bear in mind, because I had such bad social anxiety as a teenager, like real, real bad, to the point where I'm surprised I'm pretty much totally over it. And now I'm at a point where I don't care. Like, it's very much easier to just not care. And getting yourself to that point is difficult, and I don't really know how to do it. But like, just put yourself out there in like those embarrassing situations, and you'll very quickly realize that no one really cares that much.
You know what's interesting though? Like I had, I did a bunch of like stupid stuff for YouTube for ages. Like I would walk around in robes and like
Triwizard Cup.
Tournament. Literally so much I would do in public, and but weirdly, when I was doing it for a video, I was like, but now I have a reason. Mm. I mean, there's a big camera there, so that's already weird enough. As soon as there wasn't a camera, the anxiety came back and I was like stressed out in those situations where I wouldn't have been if I was literally dressed up as a Harry Potter character. Like, it's so weird to me.
But there are socially sanctioned contexts in which one can perform certain actions. So you can make an absolute fool of yourself on stage, and that's fine, because that's what you're supposed to do. If you've got a camera, you can be silly, and you're fine, because you know that everyone watching you doesn't think of you as a silly, weird person.
Yeah.
It's someone who's doing something silly and weird for a camera.
Yeah, right.
You see what I mean? Like, and I think, actually, this adds this really interesting sort of, I think, view of social anxiety, wherein if you can separate yourself from sort of the view that people have of you, I think it's a lot easier to do stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Or at least understand that the view that you think other people have of you is in your head.
Yeah, your perception of yourself is probably worse than what other people have of you.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. What I mean though is that, so if you've got social anxiety and you perceive that people have a particular view of you, it's much, much easier to get over that if you're able to draw a line of separation between this view that people have and you as a person. So for example, like you can do things on YouTube and people will have a view of the character of you that you've created for YouTube, or, you know, the version of you that you've created for YouTube. And it does reflect on you, but less so, you know?
Yeah.
In the same sense that it's probably easier to deal with a mean YouTube comment than it is to deal with a mean comment from someone that knows you.
Yeah, so there's like that separation. There's a book about this called The Courage to Be Disliked, which is essentially kind of what you're saying there, which is the idea that actually we think that being disliked or being judged negatively by somebody else is automatically a bad thing.
Mm.
And yeah, that might, you know, we're social animals, so that genuinely could have been a bad thing. But then that circuitry is still there. You know, if you were disliked in your tribe, that's quite a big deal potentially, because your tribe might have been 100 people. But now, if you're disliked by people, you can move and it will be okay.
Or you can get famous on the internet.
Yes.
That's a business model these days.
Yeah.
No, I think it's...
The majority of the 2009 YouTube was probably that.
Oh my God.
Myself included.
I think it's interesting that you bring it up, because I was talking to someone the other day and they asked me the question very directly, you know, does it bother you if someone dislikes you? And I really had to think about it, because yes, it does. But then also, I do not care what people think of me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems...
How do you square those two things?
That's why it took me so long to answer, because I knew I had those two feelings, but I couldn't understand how they were congruent in any way. And I realized, oh, it's all about context. I don't care about what people think about me generally if I respect you, or I like you, or, you know, we're friends or whatever, then I do care about your opinion more, obviously.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to dislike me, and I was asked, the question that I was sort of asked was, what if someone came up to you and said, I dislike you? Like, I do not like you. You're annoying. I don't want to be around you. And I had to think about that again. And I was like, well, if it was someone that I liked and respected and all of that nonsense, I would be upset. Now, if it was sort of based on something that was untrue, you know, they asked, oh, well, what would you do about it? And I was like, well, if it was based on something that was untrue, I would try to correct that view, because there's a very easy sort of switch to flip, right? So if Luke was like, Corey, I hate you. I don't like you. You irritate me because of this misunderstanding I've got, this misreading of you that I've got. I'd be like, oh, well, here, we can really fix this. No, Luke, actually, I don't eat babies. I that's not what I do. You're mistaken. You're mistaken. I don't eat babies. And then Luke would be like, oh, well, if you don't eat babies, that was my issue with you. There we go. We're good.
It also feels like it's almost like there are two separate, I don't know if this will necessarily vibe with exactly what you're experiencing and what you're feeling and talking about, but it's almost like you can have these two separate things where when asked the question, does it bother you if other people don't like you? Well, there is value in other people liking you.
Yeah.
That is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
People liking you is valuable. It is good. It makes you potentially safer. It gives you options, all those things. But then separately, if somebody else's brain holds a negative opinion of you, does that change your view of yourself? Not necessarily.
That was the next question I was at. Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's the two different things. Is you can see value and you can acknowledge the value of people liking you without allowing other people's opinion of you to change how you view yourself, your opinion of yourself, how you treat yourself, and the fact that you value yourself and you've got your own back, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've very much added some much needed sort of like groundwork to what I was saying. Like, it all makes sense when you add in that, because, yeah, I don't care what people think about me, but I obviously see the value in being liked, which is why I will try and change someone's opinion if it's based on a misunderstanding, because there's value in being liked and the effort to put in is minimal to, you know, to change someone's opinion. There we go. I would be hurt if someone I sort of valued said something mean about me, of course. But if someone I didn't value as much said something mean, that's not going to change my view of myself because I don't care.
But there's a third option here, which we're missing. What if someone doesn't like you and actually they're fully, like, there's the claim has foundation. Like, what if you have a flaw and somebody doesn't like that about you?
Yeah. And that was exactly... we are very similar in the way we think. Because I went on to that next.
Just because
this conversation.
The reason I brought that up is because so far, what I just said, which is like, you can see the value of people liking you, but that doesn't mean that your opinion of yourself has to change if someone doesn't like you. It could be like that sort of psychopathic thought behavior.
Yeah.
Because someone can't be right.
The way that I would look at it is that if you dislike me and you say something, I'm like, oh, that's valid. Well, that's just, that's not me thinking less of myself. Like, oh no, I'm a bad person. That's just, oh, I have something I can change about myself.
And I'm flawed as everyone is, yes.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to be upset. My opinion of myself is not going to change because I've discovered a flaw. Goodness me, I am not perfection. Whatever will I do?
Not me. I'm like, I've already thought about everything because my social
anxiety. Oh my God, yeah.
That's the thing. Mine is so internal that I'm like, I'm already so ahead. The things people haven't even thought, they've thought about me.
I realized that I did this quite a few years ago. I realized that I made jokes at my own expense before other people could make the joke about me.
Jeez.
When I was a teenager. So that's probably, that may have been a form of social anxiety, was I really had this pattern in my brain of sort of thinking about myself in the worst possible way that somebody else could think and then joking about that thing first.
So it's sort of a defense mechanism.
Yeah,
right? It's like low self-esteem. And how do you hide that you've got the low self-esteem?
Yeah.
By making yourself the joke before someone else does.
Is that what you meant?
Yeah.
Or not necessarily the joke, but the thinking.
Yeah, the thinking. So I'm like so like ahead in my head of like, oh, what's everything bad that someone could have taken from the interaction they have or interactions they have with me?
Oh, yes.
And then going over and like spinning that.
But I feel like that can sometimes be healthy. Like it is... I think
it's healthy to reflect, but not to go in a spiral.
There's a difference between reflecting and uncontrolled obsession.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like that, those are two very different things. And sitting and reflecting, like, oh, could I have hurt Luke with my words the other day? You know, I sent you a text the other day and I sat afterwards and I was like, I might have hurt Luke's feelings. Next time I speak to him, I'll bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between thinking that and then not being able to sleep because I'm like, oh God, what if Luke hates me and I've upset him? Yes. What if I'm the worst person in the world? What if he's writing a message right now to say how much he hates me and he doesn't want to see me? Do you know what I mean? There's those are two very different things.
Yeah. It's too real.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's ringing again. Why is he ringing this time, Corey?
He's ringing for After Dark, Luke.
Why have we gendered our ad bell, Corey?
Because he's a boy and I want to respect him, just like I respect After Dark, our sister show to this podcast, Sci Guys. After Dark is what happens after Sci Guys ends. We just chat about whatever we want to chat about.
If you've ever been listening to Sci Guys and gone, God, I wish there were less facts, then you can listen to After Dark. I wish there were more opinions in this show.
More philosophy and politics.
Yes, After Dark is the show where Corey and I sit down, and maybe with a guest sometimes, sit down and discuss just more sort of floaty, woo-woo-y ideas about things we think with our brains.
And where can they watch this wonderful, wonderful show, Luke?
Well, they can listen to it and watch it at patreon.com/ Sci Guys, our Patreon, where you can also support us and help us keep doing this thing that you apparently like us doing.
Did you say patreon.com/Sci Guys?
Yes, I think I did. I think I did say patreon.com/Sci Guys.
Well, if you want to listen to After Dark, it seems like you should get to patreon.com/Sci Guys.
That's patreon.com/Sci Guys, in case you weren't paying attention.
Now pay attention, because we're about to start the show.
Oh, my attention has been paid and will continue to be paid until the end, when I go home.
So, shall we maybe get back to the symptoms?
Yes.
How long has that been? That's been a good few minutes. Okay, let's get back to the symptoms.
Oh my God.
So, we were speaking about finding it difficult to do things when other people are watching, you know, like feeling like you're being watched or judged. Fear of being criticized, avoiding eye contact, or having low self-esteem. And then there are the more sort of physical symptoms, like feeling sick, nausea, sweating, trembling. I'm reading off of this list, Vigard. I'm not just...
you're not just looking at me?
Yeah.
having a nose ring.
Yeah.
Wearing a necklace. Not having sleeves.
Showing far too much skin.
Whoa. Wow. When did you become a conservative?
I swing back and forth.
It happens with age.
And also a pounding heartbeat. Palpitations, essentially. You know, you got that one too?
Yes, you're literally
feeling sick, sweating, trembling, or palpitate. You've got all four.
Yeah,
look at you. There we go. Wow,
ticked all the boxes.
Yay.
Do I win something?
You win all of the above.
And then also panic attacks are another symptom of that. And no laughing at panic attacks; they're very serious not fun. And children. It's not a symptom, but let's look at the symptoms that children can have, which is crying or getting more upset than usual, getting angry, avoiding interaction with other children and adults, a fear of going to school or, you know, doing stuff in their classroom, a fear of school performances and social events, not asking for help in school. Oh, man, that's a big one. Mm. Not asking for help.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And then being very reliant on their parents or carer. How dare a child be reliant on... No.
Ridiculous behavior.
But being overly reliant on a parent or carer. Now, those are the symptoms. Would you like to go through the diagnostic criteria, maybe?
The diagnostic criteria.
Look, if you're going to get Fox and, I guess by extension, Disney to sue us, please make it worthwhile. Not this nonsense. So let's look at the diagnostic criteria for social anxiety or social phobia from the DSM-5. So, a marked fear or anxiety about one or more social situations in which the individual is exposed to possible scrutiny by others. Examples include social interactions, for example, having a conversation, meeting unfamiliar people, being observed, eating or drinking, and performing in front of others, for example, giving a speech. Note: in children, the anxiety must occur in peer settings and not just during interactions with adults. The individual fears that he or she will act in a way or show anxiety symptoms that will be negatively evaluated, i.e. will be humiliating or embarrassing, will lead to rejection or offend others.
Why are there so many YouTubers with social anxiety? Because they're opening themselves up to way more scrutiny than the average person.
I think. So a lot of YouTubers have ADHD, social anxiety, all of that stuff. And the reason you see that, I think, is the same reason that a lot of them are gay. at the beginning.
At the beginning of YouTube.
Okay. Yeah. Well, some of them were gay in the middle for views, and then they stopped doing that. I'm looking.
Some of them were. Yeah.
The reasoning, though, really, the reasoning that I think that that's the case is because initially YouTube was for losers that didn't have friends. More or less, right?
Thanks, man. Yeah, because it was outcast, kind of like the only ones who could find, like they found their people but online.
Yeah.
Because
they
couldn't find them in real life.
And this isn't a dig
at you. You drastically increase the number of people you can potentially connect with.
Yes.
Some of them are going to like you.
Right, exactly. No, but this isn't a dig at you, because I know for a fact that Vigard was making embarrassing videos way back when.
Great.
And as what was else? I. Yeah. It's just that no one has seen them. So, it's not just you.
Cool.
It's interesting seeing that on YouTube. That it, you know, at the start, it was people that, if you were to meet them in real life, they probably wouldn't look you in the eye or talk to you.
Well, it feels like almost like the way I would sort of intellectualize it is that there are a certain set of competitions going on. There are a certain set of hierarchies in the sort of normal world. Like your school hierarchy would be the primary one that you exist in. And you might have a very different hierarchy, say if you're part of a youth club or if you're part of a church or something, you might be okay in that hierarchy inside of the church or inside of the youth club. If you're lower in the school hierarchy, then you're not very satisfied. And that sort of incentivizes you in almost like a Marxist sense to go, well, screw this hierarchy. It's rubbish. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm going to go join a different hierarchy, right? And or just to get into a hierarchy that where the specific set of values or the specific set of interests or skills that you have are better suited, right? And so you can compete more competitively in that hierarchy. So in the internet world, for example, as we've spoken about in the past on After Dark, the internet way back when, in the sort of bubble of sort of our like little like social media lovely bubble, was much more accepting of more effeminate men, of maybe gay people.
Weirdos, really.
Weirdos, exactly. It was much more accepting of those kind of traits. And so the hierarchy was necessarily skewed towards either acceptance or sometimes, as you state, even promotion of those kind of traits, which the ordinary world was not promoting, was actively demoting. And so, it feels almost like that, like you're not doing well in one set of hierarchies that you didn't choose to be part of. And so you find naturally a different hierarchy. People find Dungeons and Dragons communities, people find like fandoms, and then they compete in that hierarchy where they're maybe more adapted or more suited naturally.
I think also the fact that those people haven't had a chance to already like judge you, whereas if you were to like find an interest which then people found weird or something like that, people already have like a perception of you, but if you put it online, you could also create
you can create yourself
like to be more what you wanna be or stuff, and people couldn't say anything about it because they didn't know you.
Yeah, and at least in the beginning it was less so much a school hierarchy is like what clothes you're wearing.
Mm-hmm. What color is your hair?
What color is your hair?
What race are you?
What race are you? Yeah. And so to a certain extent those are all things that are out of your control.
Yeah.
And like you say, have been set in stone by the perceptions that people have of you by the time you actually like become sort of more conscious.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, I think something that we've kind of touched on this, but I think we should sort of say explicitly, is that the communities there are more sort of aligned with you, most likely, because realistically, way back when YouTube started, the people that were using YouTube, that were on YouTube, weren't cool. And when I say they weren't cool, I mean, in the school hierarchy, they were mid to low, probably. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like the popular kids weren't off making YouTube videos like, you know, kids are making TikTok nowadays. And that's something that kids now, like teenagers now, will probably not be aware of.
Yeah.
Because as soon as what are they called? Like the, is it the, you know, the Marcus Butler and all that lot came onto the scene.
Yeah.
That was a fundamental change in how YouTube appeared. Suddenly making videos online was a cool, cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And everyone has started doing it.
And the crucial thing about what you said there, Corey, as well, was that not only Are you sort of incentivized to find a new like hierarchy that better suits you? You're also incentivized for to look for other hierarchies if the hierarchy you're in is not doing you well. And so actually, I think I would find, you know, being obviously I would say this having had the life trajectory I've had, but like not being like the coolest kid in the world can actually serve to be very good for you in the long run, I think, because if you are, you know, we see this all the time in movies. There's like the trope of the popular kid who then leaves school and is no longer that their entire life has been about being popular. And then they enter the real world and they realize they've wasted the opportunities that were afforded to them. Now, obviously, there'll be popular kids who go on and be very successful, especially if those popular kids were also rich kids. But crucially, if the hierarchies that are sort of presented to you at birth or in your early life serve you well, and you don't have to do anything to do well in those hierarchies, you're not going to look for what's emerging. And now we have ideas like 1/3 of all kids want to be YouTubers when they grow up, which like is insane, because when I was starting being a YouTuber, that was like the most, it was like I already was not the coolest kid in the world.
It just made you weirder.
That was already, yeah. It was even weirder.
You're
to
talking
be,
to no one
yeah,
online.
And people
what
like
are you doing?
Watching it and then like bringing up things and laughing at it. It's like, and then it's like, well, nowadays kids think that's the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, remember, I also think like this is a different tangent, but I think the people who now also are already popular and then become more popular, I've noticed like specifically those people, when I've met them, they are so much meaner because they've already been popular and then they just get more.
Imagine that.
Yeah,
life.
They're already like, because the popular kids like traditionally were, I feel like kind of like mean, I guess. And then, I don't know, they just seem like they feel like that already is working. So they just continue to be like that. I don't know. It's so weird because the TikTokers, a lot of them that I've met, I'm just like, wow, I feel like I'm with like the popular kids.
Yes, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a very strange. Yeah, the whole dynamic has shifted in the like 10, 15 years since we started.
It feels like you're back in like it. Literally, I remember like running into like a group of those type of like YouTubers or TikTokers, and they did like a classic high school thing of like seeing me coming, whispering to each other, and then as I walked past, they turned and laughed.
Oh God.
And I was just like, what this? And I was just, I mean, I was just like, wow, this, I feel like this wouldn't have happened with like the YouTubers who were back in the day.
I think I don't disagree with you, although I wouldn't say it's popularity that made these people mean necessarily. I think the biggest difference for me between that sort of old school YouTube, let's say, and when I say old school YouTube, I need you to understand, I'm not talking about 2012. I'm talking about back in the day.
Yeah.
Like back before 2009, right? Like that era. It was a community thing, right? Mm. And even coming up to sort of 2009, 2010-ish, there was still a community sort of aspect there. And when that started to go, it was much easier to be mean. Because I think that being popular doesn't necessarily make you mean.
No,
there are any number of incels that are absolute just arseholes because they're unpopular. You know, popularity doesn't, a lack of popularity doesn't absolve you in the same sense that being popular doesn't automatically make you horrible. I mean, obviously being popular makes it easier to be mean because like, you know, people are gonna, if you've got that social power, it's very easy to use it against others. But yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you. It's, there was a very obvious change. And I feel like part of that isn't necessarily to do with them being popular, but the popularity aspect kind of taking away from the community. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because it became less of a sort of let's all enjoy this cool platform, this thing that we're all doing, where you know we're all enjoying this thing, and it became very much, look at me,
yeah,
I am the star, you are my fan, you are different from me fundamentally, and now there's no way of getting out of that.
True, like, and it's like they're all for like just building themselves up rather than the group, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
The collab days of YouTube aren't really a thing anymore, where it was just like people meeting and hanging out and filming videos together, and then that was like the big thing. Like I feel like everything has moved very far away from that.
Yeah, it's become more of a sort of actual media landscape now. It's mad interesting. You've got like, you know, actual TV shows. you know, like chat shows and stuff, posting to YouTube regularly. SNL is posting to YouTube regularly. You've got actual sort of movies that are put on YouTube. You know, it's insane the level of quality now compared to back then.
My film will be available for on YouTube for rent. Not for free, but it will be available on YouTube.
You have a film, Luke?
Oh, yeah, I have a film. It's called The Drowning of Arthur Braxton. It's out now. It's not out now, but it's out now for you. And I would love for you to watch it, please, and let me know what you think.
And fittingly, it's about a boy who has social anxiety.
Wow. No way, you're so right.
Let's get back to the symptoms. Not the symptoms, the diagnostic criteria. So we've gone through the first part. The second part then goes on to say that the social situations almost always provoke fear or anxiety. And that's essentially saying, you know, not just sometimes you feel anxious, you know, it's not sort of, you know, every now and then. It's like a chronic anxiety from social situations. And in kids, it talks about how fear anxiety could be expressed by crying, tantrums, freezing, clinging, shrinking, or failing to speak in social situations. Because obviously kids have a harder time expressing themselves than adults generally. The criteria go on to say the social situations are avoided or endured with intense fear or anxiety. The fear, anxiety, or avoidance causes clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. The part that we always love. It's got to impair your functioning socially or professionally or something like that. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not a psychiatric condition. You're not mentally ill if it's not affecting your life. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So true, sis.
You know what I found kind of annoying about one of the things I had to do for like therapy for anxiety was like the checklist of like how much does this affect your life, whatever. That checklist specifically, it was like how much do you avoid it, but then there wasn't one that's like how much is it like still prevalent while you're there and in those social situations. Because that was my thing. I was like, I'll still do it. I'll just the whole way there and during and after, I'll be feeling the anxiety, I guess.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean. I think the issue for me is that, and it's kind of directly related to what you're talking about. When it comes to mental health, we look at it in a very odd way where we only look at the sort of outcomes and we don't think about the internal experience. So yeah. The way that we kind of view it is that if your mental illness is severe, very, very severe, then it will have X impact on you, X external impact on you, right? So for example, if I had depression and it was exactly as severe as Luke's depression, the assumption is that Luke and I would be acting in the same way, mm-hmm. you know, due to that depression. Or rather, it's maybe more a case of we measure severity based on external outcome. So Luke could be outwardly showing more signs of depression and therefore he would be more depressed than I am. Whereas I'm not showing those external signs, but our internal experience could be absolutely the same. And so I don't know. I feel like it's just a kind of a flaw in the way that we measure mental illness, basically based on what you are and aren't able to do.
Is that what the separation between like high functioning depression and depression is?
Oh, so yeah. Well, the difference between sort of high functioning and low functioning generally is just your ability to function.
Okay.
And I mean, those terms can kind of be problematic mm-hmm. when in some instances, but ultimately measuring how bad someone's got it based on how much they're able to do isn't. Is it? It takes out the variables of like, well, how much, like, how many coping mechanisms have you got to deal with this?
Yeah.
How long have you had to learn to get around this? Yeah. You know, like, or, like, how good are you at coping with things like this? Because
and even things like, do you have savings?
Oh my god, yeah.
Like, because if you're like not very well off, depression is going to have more obvious external symptoms. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, if you've got a load of money, but that money is dwindling mm-hmm. because you have depression, that's going to be treated less severely because it's not impacting on your ability to heat your home or mm-hmm. buy food. It's a bit of a weird one, isn't it?
Or I mean, vice versa.
It would still impact because you wouldn't, like, you'd say, like, I can't hold down a job.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't feel as urgent.
Or vice versa. It could be a case of, well, how bad is your depression? Has it stopped you from going to work? And if you're someone who is on it, like, if you miss going to work, you will not be able to, you won't have a place to live. When you're in that kind of situation, you could be incredibly depressed and still manage to get up and go to a job.
Yeah.
Whereas in, you know, that situation that you pointed out, Luke, where someone could have savings and they're dwindling, oh, I can't hold down a job. These two people, one person going to be having it much worse than the other. It doesn't really matter which, but the person who has the savings is going to be seen potentially as more severe because the external outcome of them not being able to hold down a job, whereas the other person isn't really in a position of not being able to hold down a job.
Because the anxiety and the adrenaline kicks in.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. It's so interesting, the sort of little flaws you notice in things like this.
I've heard Rebecca was telling me about this experience when she was like close to, she's an actor, and so, you know, there are patches where it's good and patches where it's not good. And she was telling me about this, like something just kicks in, like as you're about to go broke. Mm-hmm. Like it's just, it doesn't matter what's going on. It doesn't matter how motivated you are. It's just like a survival instinct throws in. Like I've been lucky in that I started working when I was 15. Mm-hmm. And so I built up this little pot there that means I don't ever get to the point where I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna die, which I'm in a very fortunate position to be. But yeah, so I heard about this through my wife when she was just like, yeah, sometimes there's just a mechanism that is just there. And that won't be the case for everybody. If somebody doesn't have that mechanism kick in, mm-hmm. then I'm not saying that that's your weak or that you're whatever, but you know, I struggle with motivation sometimes. And she was telling, I was like, where do you get the motivation to do this? And she's like, well, sometimes something just kicks in, man, and you don't have a choice.
Well, you've got a view, like, there's sometimes a view of it, of like, I don't have a choice of whether or not I go into work. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I've been in that position where I've had like no money. And if I miss going into work or I get fired, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I get it, right? Like you can be horribly depressed. Your life could be terrible. And that's where coping mechanisms come in, right? Mm-hmm. That's why people, that's one of the reasons that people turn to drugs and alcohol and all those other things that help them not just cope, but get through it. Because forcing yourself beyond belief, like using up every ounce of your energy to force yourself to go to a job just so you can survive and you know, for another week or month or whatever, like that takes so much out of you in a way that is so hard to describe, you know,
because you're already like at your limit and then you're pushing through this thing and then the outcome isn't that you're now like rich, it's that you can survive.
Oh great, I'm at like, I'm not drowning now.
Congratulations. Yeah, you get to.
Now I still have the depression.
Exactly. Congratulations. You get to continue experiencing depression, but worse now.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like a cure for a lot of mental illness is just money.
Well, they're trialing that actually. They're doing some trials about like little bits of universal basic income and seeing how that, obviously, like it feels obvious that that would create better outcomes, but also just like whether it increases general well-being, just to know that, because you know, in our country we have a comparatively to other countries okay benefit system. Yeah. There are countries that have better benefit systems, and there are countries that have no benefit system at all. And we have an okay benefit system in that it's not going to let you die as long as you have an address where you can claim it to.
And you're not disabled.
And also you're not now dealing with spiraling housing and heating costs.
And you don't have dependents.
Okay, maybe I should just rephrase this. and there are countries with no benefit system at all. And so on the sliding scale of benefit systems, ours is not at the bottom. But you still have all these other things like social stigma attached and also having to claim it. You don't have an automatic, you know, don't worry what will happen. You'll always be able to get a bit of food and a place to live and a bit of heat, right? We don't have that automatic thing that's like a universal basic income type of thing where you always know you're going to be on the line, but fine.
Yeah.
Without having to wait for the Department of Work and Pensions to fix your application or whatever you have. And so that's an unnecessary level of anxiety. Like, imagine that the feeling you have if it was like, I don't feel, for example, I know that I could, in principle, claim benefits. I could eventually get to the point where I need to claim benefit and I need, like, and I can do it. But it doesn't feel like my country's got my back. Despite the fact that I know the system does exist, because I have to apply for it and there's a bunch of things, hoops you have to jump through to get there, it doesn't feel like my country's automatically going to get my back. So I don't go through life feeling safe.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though I might be from a literal existential, like not going to start, I personally, not necessarily people with disabilities or other situations, I personally am not going to be in a situation where I'm going to starve because I'm able-bodied and have a benefit system that would eventually work for me.
I think one of the main issues for me, just sort of thinking about this, is that it takes far too long. And not just it takes far too long for the application to go through all that. Like, you could lose your house in the time that it takes for you to, you know, get on benefits or whatever. My point is more that the bar for getting on benefits is so low that once you're at that point, it's very hard to get out of it, right?
Yeah.
A safety net shouldn't catch you, you know, as you hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It should give you, it should stop you from hitting the ground.
A safety
right?
sheet.
Yeah. Like, oh, look, we have a safety mat here. You're still going to hit the ground pretty bloody hard, break a few bones, but you're not dead.
And it has not scaled with the spiraling cost of living.
Yeah, exactly. The mat is just getting thinner and thinner.
Well, the mat's not getting thinner, but you're jumping from
higher. You're jumping from higher. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it's...
And you're in a vacuum. There's no terminal velocity. You're just jumping from high.
Faster. Yeah, look, I think that there are a lot of problems with our benefit system. And ultimately, I think money would just help a lot. Maybe not with social anxiety, but definitely with a lot of other things, you know?
Yeah, shocker. The outcome of that experiment was, yes, it does actually help.
Oh my God, what?
What? Money helps people? What?
Are you saying that having security makes you not feel insecure?
That's correct.
What?
Whoa.
Insane. Yes. It's almost as though depression is a rational and reasonable response to this horrible world we live in. That reminds me of climate anxiety. I'm sorry, but climate anxiety is the most irritating thing I have ever heard of in my life.
Uh-huh.
Journalists are using climate anxiety to mean people that are worried about climate change, which you should be. That's a normal, like, let's stop pathologizing things. If you are not worried about the climate, you are wrong.
You know, if you don't drink water and you're in a place where there isn't any water, you get thirst anxiety.
Oh my God. Yeah. I've had thirst anxiety before.
Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Man. I just went to some therapy, you know, and it sorted it all out.
Yeah.
I realized that I didn't actually need the water and it was all in my head.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you came to that conclusion.
let's get back to the diagnostic criteria. We're almost done. So we've spoken about, you know, the classic, it's got to last 6 months or more. It's got to impair other parts of your life, standard stuff when it comes to sort of anxiety disorders or other sort of disorders in the DSM-5. And then it also goes on to say that it's not attributable, the fear, anxiety or avoidance, it's not attributable to the physiological effects of a substance. So drug abuse or medication or another medical condition. Just your classic, you know, sort of safety. If this is something else, it's not this.
Yeah.
It's in, like, literally every single thing in the DSM-5. Well, I mean, it makes sense. It's diagnostic criteria. You run through them. You know, we make fun of it, but it's how it's got to work.
All I mean is, I feel like they could just put an asterisk and then put that at the end of the book.
It's like assumed, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, yeah. And it also goes on to then say that it's not better explained by the symptoms of another mental disorder, like panic disorder, body dysmorphic disorder, or autism spectrum disorder. So, you know, if it's any of those things, then it's not this. That's not to say that if you're autistic, you can't have social anxiety, but it's obviously there's complexities there. And then it also goes on to talk about if another medical condition, for example, Parkinson's disease, obesity, disfigurement from burns or injury is present, the fear, anxiety or avoidance is clearly unrelated or is excessive. What they're saying there is, hey, look, if we think you probably should be anxious and people are going to judge you and you're correct about people judging you, you ain't crazy unless... you is crazy. That's what it's saying.
DSM-5.
Yeah, not that.
Couldn't have come to that conclusion on my own.
Not that obviously having social anxiety makes you crazy. All I'm saying here is that what they're saying is that if you've got an actual reason to be anxious about social situations, then your anxiety needs to be excessive to be classified as social anxiety. And then the last part is one of those specify if parts. Essentially, this is just kind of a slightly different category of social anxiety. So performance only if the fear is restricted to speaking or performing in public. So kind of sort of stage fright. Let's call it that. It's like stage fright. So that'd be sort of subset of social anxiety there. And those are the diagnostic criteria for social anxiety. Mm. Now we know if we have social anxiety or not. If this sounds like you, go to a doctor.
If it's very big for me, it's just delete the if.
Can't believe we just did an episode of Sci Guys about Vegard.
Yeah. Well, we gotta have you on. We gotta do it about you. We do it about older guests. To be fair, you're not the first person to sit here and do an episode that is almost entirely about you. The number of those that we've done. Yeah. You know, we were just sitting there and then off pod we're like, oh man, that was rough, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know? I just want to quickly...
Sometimes Corey checks in that I'm doing okay. Just to check. Are you okay? Yeah, buddy, I'm holding up.
I just want to quickly cover the differences between generalized anxiety disorder and social anxiety disorder. Do you have any ideas what the differences between those two might be?
Well, social anxiety disorder will be triggered by social situations, the prospect of social situations. General anxiety disorders... Oh, you're just generally anxious about a lot of stuff. Your general anxiety system is on overdrive for pretty much anything and everything, or at least a wide variety of things.
Yeah, so what I've got here is that your anxieties are about major life issues as well as smaller sort of, you know, day-to-day stuff. That would be generalized anxiety disorder. And then, yeah, social anxiety, it's just based on... social situations. Basically all those diagnostic criteria that we've gone through already.
Wait, does that mean that if you have generalized anxiety, like, you can have both? Or is it like you have generalized anxiety so that also includes social anxiety? Or is it, how does that work?
I imagine you could have both. If you have general anxiety and it's also skewed.
Yeah.
It'd be like an adding effect.
Yeah.
Like your anxiety is heightened in general.
Yeah.
And it's even more in regards to social situations.
That was what I was thinking. I was more like, if it is like a like subset of, I guess, I don't know.
I think, well, I think that's viewing it in a way of thinking of these as real things, which, as opposed to just like...
Into that typical trap.
As opposed to just like, what's wrong with that guy over there? Oh man, he's scared of other people. Let's call that social anxiety disorder.
Yeah, this is kind of why you, when you said about if, for example, you have autism spectrum disorder, then you wouldn't necessarily fall into the category of social anxiety because your social anxiety might be better described by being autistic.
Yeah.
In part because the purpose of the label is in order to talk about treatment and how you and sort of coping mechanisms, and the coping mechanisms with somebody who's autistic may be different to somebody who has anxiety disorder, because somebody with an anxiety disorder may be having an overactive fight or flight response, for example. I do not know anything, as always, caveat. And then somebody with autism may be processing information differently, which is causing
maybe getting anxiety through being uncomfortable in social situations, just through not feeling like connected to other people.
Yeah.
Through that.
But the description of what's going on sounds very similar,
right,
but the mechanism might be entirely different. So the treatment or coping mechanism may be entirely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it is interesting because then, you know, generalized anxiety disorder, you can, I guess, conceivably have what we would call generalized anxiety disorder and social anxiety disorder, but whether we've decided that you can have both at the same time is an entirely different issue. I don't even know. I genuinely have no idea. I feel like if you've been diagnosed with anxiety, being then diagnosed with social anxiety just seems redundant to me. Do you know what I mean? Because like, what if you're going to treatment for anxiety, that would probably cover the social anxiety.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's like specific ones of like in social situations. I remember one was like, which I thought, I mean, maybe it works, but I don't know. It was the whole like five things you can see and five things you I don't know. But I feel like that was more directly linked to like, no, wait, I guess it could be if you're just alone as well and anxious.
You get told to do that when you're alone and anxious. It's a grounding thing, really. And if you need to be grounded in a social situation, then that's helpful. If you need to be grounded when you're just spiraling on your own, there you go.
Could you describe the five things you... What is this thing that you have been taught, just in case people don't know what it is?
Oh, okay. So it's... I don't remember if... I'm not sure if I'm going to get all of them, but it's five things you can see, five things you can smell...
So you're meant to internally be naming
five things you can
things.
See, four things you can smell, three things you can... Yeah, I think it's...
And then it's like feel and... it goes... It's basically like... So you're not so in your head. You're kind of like being aware of your environment settling.
Once you realize you've been triggered, this is an exercise for you to do inside your head.
Yeah.
You go, okay, I'll name five things. Chair, camera, Vegard, light, Corey.
I think the idea is to bring you back to the situation, to be present in the situation. So if you're spiraling, you're in your head.
Yeah.
But if I have to look around the room and be like, I can see a TV, I can see a microphone.
Distracted from your thoughts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's five things you can see, four things you can touch, three things you can hear, two things you can smell, and one thing you can taste.
I was going to say, five things you can smell is a bit of a tall order.
Yeah.
Like,
scent is not that high definition of a sense.
I just remember I tried this and I was just like, this is making it work. And now I can't remember the list. And then I was like, oh my God. And then I was like overwhelmed by the whole.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, this is a nightmare. I'm just going to go back to try to listen to a podcast.
This podcast, I hope. Yeah, Sci exactly. Guys cures anxiety, or at least, you know, treats it.
I'm not standing by that claim.
And neither am I. Let's get on to the causes. So we've gone through the diagnostic criteria. Yeah. Let's just fire through the rest of this. What causes social anxiety?
Trauma?
We don't know.
We don't know?
For sure. There's some genetic components. There are environmental factors. But ultimately, we don't fully know.
Cool. That was a quick segment.
Yeah. Well, as I look, people would go nuts if I didn't say what causes. They always, whenever people vote in these topics, they always want to know what causes the thing.
Often there isn't an answer.
We don't know. If we knew, we probably would have done something about it by now, you know? Like, maybe. But no, we don't know. And then when it comes to treatment, honestly, the main treatment would be CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, but you could also have guided self-help, antidepressants, and some other things as well. You can also do self-help. The NHS actually has some guidelines for how to help yourself through this, because if you've got mild social anxiety, you might not actually need to, you know, see a professional to sort of help yourself. Do you know what I mean?
I think counseling too, like, because it could be rooted in something like deeper and stuff, so you can have counseling, because I moved away from CBT to counseling. In the process of it.
I mean, with these, there are so many different... It's basically the broad spectrum of treatments that you've got. Whenever there's something not quite right going on up in your noggin, you know? Yeah. Like, we chuck the same stuff at it most of the time, you know? Like,
see what sticks.
It's like, is this working for you? Is it working? Okay, now here's some antidepressants. There you go. That's like, antidepressants are almost like a cure-all. They're like snake oil.
Wow.
Except they work. Except they work.
So they sometimes work.
Sometimes. Except for when they don't, and they do the exact opposite and make it worse.
Yeah, that's my experience.
Like, honestly, antidepressants are mad to me because we use them for so many different things. But also, we don't know how they work. But also, sometimes they don't work and they're really bad. Like,
do they know why they don't work?
Oh my God.
They don't even know why they work. Let alone why they don't.
They know that they work.
Yes.
They just don't know the mechanism. They don't know why they do what why they have the effect that they do.
Oh my God. What? Yeah.
They're safe, they're effective, and ultimately if you're with your doctor and you're in communication, it's good. You should try antidepressants. Yeah. You shouldn't be scared of them. No. If they work for you, they work for you. If they don't, they don't. But you should try if you feel comfortable.
It's just interesting that they don't, that there isn't knowledge on it.
It's brain stuff.
Once you get into looking at science, you find out that we know an awful lot about what does work and doesn't work, and we don't always know why.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of not as relevant as finding solutions to things.
I mean, when it comes to the brain, it's very difficult and complex, and it's very hard to know how things work. And when, you know, with the brain, if something works, then bloody do it. You know, like, if it works, it doesn't matter why right now. Let's try and figure out why, you know, in the near future. Let's just use this thing to solve the problem, you know? Because otherwise, what are you going to do for depression?
Some people are going to die if you don't do something.
Exactly. And that is it. That's everything on social anxiety.
Do you feel valid and recognized?
So valid and recognized.
Did we cure your social anxiety disorder?
I have less sweaty.
Less sweaty. I can feel them.
Nice. We did it. Wow. We did it. Little round of applause for all of us.
Yes.
And that's almost the end of the show, but we still have a quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh my God, I was bad at this last time.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finish asks the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
A little drop of serotonin.
A little drop. Just one.
Okay.
Sip it down.
What is your buzzer, Vigard?
Ah.
And Luke, what's your buzzer?
Ooh.
Fantastic. So my question for you is, when does social anxiety usually start? Luke.
When you're a teenager.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct. Well done. Here's your little drop of serotonin.
Ooh, it feels so good.
Now, no more for the next month.
That's okay. I'm used to that.
Well, with the quickfire quiz out of the way, I think it's time to thank some of our new patrons. If you are watching for the first time and you have no idea what's going on, we thank new patrons every month at the end of our Patreon vote episode. So if you want to be thanked, or you want to vote on episodes, you want all of the other perks that come along with joining our Patreon, head there to patreon.com/SciGuys. But in the meantime, let's get thanking. So thank you to Hevox. Thank you.
Thank you to Hannah.
Thank you to Nathaniel.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Dale.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Ev.
Thank you, Sesha.
Thank you, Jed.
Thank you to the first person on this list with a surname, Colleen Lethaus.
And thank you to the first person on this list who has a difficult to pronounce name, Millsby.
I think that award went to Colleen Lethaus, actually. But thank you very much to Zeffy Robbins.
And that is all for this month. What a good group.
What a lovely group of people supporting this lovely little podcast.
Well, that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Denito and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod.
No, wrong. Incorrect.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at It's Vagard everywhere. Why did I suddenly forget my at
It's Vagard everywhere. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.